this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
I would string it out over a couple of months at least, have meetings about goals, I'd do planning sessions together, and this is before any money's been exchanged. I'd be asking, you know, what other interests they have.
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Royce Turville, and in this episode, I'm interviewing Frank about joint ventures and how they can sink or rocket propel your property business. Now, for me, in property, I'd always been a bit of a lone wolf, I suppose. So I guess I'd always thought that I can just do this myself. And sort of joint ventures was never something me and my wife were really open to. But obviously, since meeting yourself, Frank, that's kind of flipped on its head. And now I can see the benefits of a joint venture as we've suddenly got more busy. However, there is a lot to consider when it comes to a joint venture. So it's not just a case of, yeah, let's go and joint venture with the first person that we find. So yeah, that's the subject we're going to be covering today. So tell us more, Frank, around the joint ventures and how they can sink or rocket propel your property business.
Absolutely. Yeah, good to be here again. I think that joint ventures are probably one of the least understood aspects of property investing, and unfortunately the most promoted strategy to newbie investors, and I think it's so wrong. I think it's because it gets sales. I think that's why it is encouraged so much by people who really should know better, because novice investors or people that want to get into property investing often will be aware that they're lacking in skills. So if it's someone who's not invested before, or someone who's not got tons of money, or they perhaps have got some money but they haven't got loads of time, they'll be aware that there's something missing. And if someone stands up on stage and says, don't worry about it, if you need more time, or if you need more money, or if you haven't got the experience, just joint venture with someone, and it just so happens we've got 50 people or 100 people or 1,000 people in our community that are just waiting to joint venture with you, so run to the back of the room and sign up, you can see why it is promoted so heavily. And it's not the holy grail of property investing. Now, I say this as someone who's got more than 20 joint venture partners. I have many JVs, and in some instances I've got double digit joint ventures with the same partner. So I like joint venturing, but I think there's a formula absolutely for picking a joint venture partner. There's a formula for whether or not you should actually do a JV. And then once you've picked the JV partner, there's definitely a system to making it work and having it synergistic rather than costly and frustrating. So it can be a real, you said rocket propel your business. It can be a real injection of energy and momentum into your business, absolutely. But equally and more often in my experience, it can be like dragging a breeze block around on a chain. It can really slow you down.
Yeah, I get that. That's good. And like you say, it's interesting how you say you've had a room full of people, and 50% of them were people who had loads of money. 50% of them were people who had loads of time. If you just randomly paired those people together, the probability of failure would be high in most cases. So it's not just a case of kind of how it is advertised, as you know, you've got money or time or a bit of both, and meet somebody else who's not got the bit you've got and do a joint venture and the world's going to be great and you're going to smash it in property. It's not at all that simple. So what sort of things would you be doing to kind of figure out whether a joint venture is going to work with somebody? You know, what steps would you take to try and understand it better?
Yeah, well, I'm in the privileged position of mentoring our franchisees. And so we've got franchisees all over the country. And also we have new franchisees joining all the time. So in any given month, we'll have between one and three franchisees joining the partnership. So often I'm asked by new franchisees as well as existing ones whether a joint venture is a good idea for them. And I always look at them first. So to use your example there of half a room got money, half a room got time, if a new client's with me and they've got some money and lots of time and they're asking me about joint venturing, where I always start with, what are you hoping to get from the other person? And if they say, oh, I'm hoping to get a JV partner with loads of money and loads of experience, that's quite hard to find. Because why would someone with loads of money and loads of experience want a joint venture with someone who's got no money and no experience and has just got some time to offer? Because if you think about a joint venture, normally my starting point is 50-50. We'll go 50-50 on the money, as in the profit or the equity or whatever it is. And if you're looking at that, I wouldn't joint venture with someone who had no experience and no money. I'd employ someone for an hourly rate, because you have to think what you'd be getting from the other person. I think this is a really useful, people don't do it, people are naive when they enter JVs sometimes, but I think a really useful way of evaluating whether a JV is likely to work for you is to put yourself in the other person's shoes. If you've got time and no money, but you are experienced and you're looking for someone inexperienced who's got money, then that can work really well. And then, yes, absolutely, you can do deals you wouldn't be able to do otherwise, and you'll be getting half of those deals and you won't be putting any money in, so you could actually have multiple JV partners along those lines. That can work really well. And if you're thinking about the other person in that scenario, they've got money, no experience and no time, their money's either going to sit in the stock market, it's going to sit in a bank account, or they can JV with you and make half of really good deals. So yeah, it's tricky. And to come back to that example you used, if none of those people in the room, so half have got money, half have got time, if none of them have got any experience, it doesn't matter how much time or money you've got, you're probably going to end up in a train wreck down the road. And so experience is the third element of it, for sure, to take into account.
Brilliant. I'm aware there are tools out there, but it's probably worth touching on it. So for the people like me, where I like to put some science behind it, I feel like I'm a fairly good judge of character, but I like a bit of processing of information into something to give me a bit of a guidance of a result. We do on the partnership, and again, we don't have to go into masses of detail on this because it's a whole session in itself, but we do things like DISC.
Yeah, to take one step back, I will absolutely talk about DISC because it's an integral part of our partnership, but I think sometimes people think about a JV at the level of depth of buying a house from a vendor. Now, do I care if I hit it off with a vendor? Do I care if, like, we've got loads in common, if we agree on stuff, if we enjoy each other's company? Not really. My job is to serve them. My job is to solve their property problem. Vendors are hilarious. They'll tell you all about their political beliefs. They'll tell you all about their xenophobia and all that. It's probably nothing I've not heard. And my job is just to listen, to smile, to build rapport, and then to solve their problem. But a JV partner, it's not like a one-off transaction with a vendor. It's more like a marriage. And this will sound really cynical, it can be a lot longer than a marriage. So my longest JV, I started my first JV in 2008, and what are we in 2020? So that's 12 years. That is in fact, that is twice as long as my first marriage. There's some personal information for you. So I think it's important to treat it with the respect it deserves. And so you mentioned DISC, and DISC is absolutely critical. DISC is a personality profiling tool. We use it on the partnership to understand our own personalities. We also use it to decide very rapidly in a sales situation what the other person's personality profile is, so that we can communicate with them effectively. So communicate with them in the way that they want to be communicated with. So for example, if a vendor or an investor is very detail orientated, you don't want to go in with a superficial, dominant bang, bang, bang. You actually want to go in a more considered, data-led, factual manner, because you know that they want all the detail regardless of how you feel about making decisions. And that kind of an approach is so important. My first business partner, the one from 12 years ago, was a very slow, considered, data-led investor. I was 10 years his junior, so 10 years younger, really fast-paced, really comfortable with risk. He was quite risk-averse, really people-led, really quite dominant. And oh my goodness, that was a recipe for friction. The first 3 years or so, like, there were almost several divorces of that JV, which is funny because we did in our first year, or in the first full year, so 2009, we did 26 flips to investors. And that was in the depths of a recession, and bought many properties for ourselves as well. We still hold a significant portfolio between the two of us. And we learned to work together, and we learned to make it work. Now, that is nothing to do with time, nothing to do with money, nothing to do with experience. That's just difference in personality profiles. And that is what a JV is. A JV is basically opening a company together. Okay, that company you might only spend half an hour a month on, but it is having a company together or a business together, even if you own something personally. But you also want to consider goals. So where are you both headed? What do you both consider fair in terms of money in, time in, decision making? What happens if you disagree on a decision? There's a lot to consider for sure.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that boils down to, it's a very good thing, because the thing is with people, you always think you're the only person that's like you and you're always right, which I think can become dangerous sometimes. And the problem is you don't always see things from different angles. You only ever see it from your own point of view. And certainly in our experience, what we found is we have quite a nice mix of personalities within our JV. And sometimes I'll say something or think something, but I've not thought of something else because of my type of personality that our JV partner has thought of. And again, you're always going to have disagreements and different opinions of things, but you need to try and keep it rational and reasonable within those conversations. But ultimately, it's just somebody else's view on something, which in the long term, generally, if you're in the right JV, it tends to be for the better. There's things that we've done that we wouldn't have done if it wasn't for our JV partner encouraging us to do it, because we're at the other extreme of, like, you know, we're a bit more cautious. But finding that balance and those different viewpoints from different people is really beneficial, and it will benefit you in the long term ultimately, won't it?
Absolutely it will. And yours is an even harder JV, because there's yourself and your wife Ella, and then you've got your JV partner. So there's actually three. If you think about a JV with two people, there's only one relationship. If you think about a JV with three people, you only added one person, but now you've got three relationships. You've tripled the number of relationships. So the opportunity for friction, the opportunity for delay and procrastination, confusion, miscommunication, all goes through the roof. And so it's definitely not something to be entered into lightly.
Definitely. So as part of our kind of I suppose due diligence, without us knowing it at the time, but obviously we wanted to get to know our JV partner a little bit, so we met them a couple of times and that sort of thing. Is this the type of thing that you would look to recommend? It's kind of like almost going back to the marriage and dating
analogy. I was just
thinking
that. Yeah, like, absolutely.
Would you go on a few first dates, or you wouldn't go in on a blind date? You know,
I absolutely would. I would sit down, I'd mull it over. People jump into bed, to use that analogy, way too quickly with one another. So I would string it out over a couple of months at least. I would have meetings about goals. I'd do planning sessions together. And this is before any money's been exchanged. I'd be asking, you know, what other interests they have. You know, because you can't judge someone if they only want to work 20 hours a week. If they want to drop their kids off at school, pick their kids up from school, and they're only wanting to invest 10% of their time into your JV, that's 2 hours a week. That's not a lot of time to make a new business venture, and that's what a JV is, work. Unless, you know, if I was offering 2 hours a week into a JV, I can get a lot done with 2 hours a week. But that's A, because I've got loads of JVs, I know what I'm doing, but B, I've got a team, you know, I've got 8 full-time people that I can outsource to. So my 2 hours is actually my JV partners. In fact, I don't meet with all my JV partners every week, but some of them I do. I do a video call with them for a maximum of 30 minutes once a week. And so on a Monday, I go from one JV to the next and the next and the next, all on the same video link. They come on, they've got an agenda, we follow the agenda, they've got commitments to do at the end of the meeting, they report those back to me via email. It's really efficient. And some of those guys are doing 20 hours a week just on our JV. But the key thing is that's communicated up front, and it's agreed up front, and we have really clear expectations, which is only possible if you don't jump into it too quickly, which is what you're talking about, having those meetings, the likelihood is the first time you do anything, it's going to fail or it's not going to go as well as it could do. And so for me, the slower you do and the more cautious you are, the more likely you are to find out or realize it's not a good fit before you've spent a load of money, before you've bought properties, etc. The number of people that I've come across where they've bought a property and then realized that they've got such differing opinions of what a successful JV looks like that they're then a bit stuck. And invariably, one partner ends up doing more work and they resent the other one taking the money out and all that.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, so...
or not, depending, yeah, on, yeah, depending on the JV.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So on the back of really your advice then, as we were entering or sort of sounding out our JV, you advised us to write up a document that was that was clear on people's, within the JV, you know, their roles and responsibilities within it, so it was clear up front. And I think many people don't do that, and I think that's probably one of the major downfalls of a JV, because it's not clear up front exactly who's going to be doing what. We did that, and I think on the back of doing that, that's probably helped our JV, which has been really, you know, successful and great for us. And you know, from time to time, we'll refer back to that agreement or even update it if needs be, because a lot of the stuff you don't know from day one, but you would have a sound idea as to who's good at certain stuff or who likes certain stuff and who doesn't like other bits. So what's your advice around sort of the sort of, it starts to get a bit serious then, doesn't it? It's like, ooh, we're writing an agreement here, you know. What's your advice around that?
Yeah, and it should be serious. It absolutely, and if that gets a bit uncomfortable and people start getting cold feet, that's good, because they've got cold feet before you've actually committed loads of money and loads of time. You know, if you've got mortgages together and you bought properties, it's very hard then to unravel it. So that document is so important. And I normally, in fact, I have a template. If anyone's interested in doing a JV with me, I only JV with my franchisees, because we already have an established trust. I know at what level they are in their journey. I know that they're going to be continuously trained by me and mentored in how to do things properly. But if a franchisee contacts me and says, look, Frank, I'd be interested in JVing on this particular transaction, or would you be interested in JVing along these lines? And at some point or another, I've probably JV'd with about 2/3 of my franchisees. In fact, you're one of the few that I haven't always, I think.
Still sounding each other out.
Exactly. Well, to be fair, you've got 2 JV partners already, so that's probably why. But you've got the bases covered. But in terms of how to then take it to the next level, sitting down with a blank sheet of paper and going, so what are you putting in? What am I putting in? And what are we both expecting to take out? And this is the bit that people miss. People miss the fact that if I'm going to do 100% and you're going to do 100%, if we work together, we're going to get 200% done of the work, and we're going to get 200% of the results. And that's not the case. People misunderstand this all the time. In fact, some people think if I had my 100% and you had your 100%, we're going to end up with 250%. But if you do it randomly, so unless you do this on purpose, your 100% and my 100% gets diluted, because we've now got to communicate with one another. So I've got to have at least a weekly meeting with you to check we're on track. But then there's going to be questions, you know, oh, this refurb's overrun, what should we do about this? Or, oh, we've been declined planning, or the tenants asked for, you know, we've got tenants at the moment, middle of the coronavirus, saying, you know, can't pay my rent. How are we going to decide what to do? So some of my franchisees are writing letters to their tenants, some of them are not. What if you want to write letters and I don't want to, and we're in the same JV? There's all that communication that needs to happen, all that decision making that takes away from the 100%. If you're just on your own, you think about it for 10 seconds, you make a decision and you crack on with it. You don't have to go check it with someone else. So straight away, if I was doing 100% on my own and you were doing 100%, the total of working separately is 200%. But if now I'm only achieving 80% because we're spending all this time communicating and planning and checking we're on the same page, which absolutely must happen, I'm not saying it shouldn't, and you're doing the same, the cumulative result is now only 160%. We've lost a ton. And that's where most JVs fall over. The fact that you and I haven't JV'd is absolutely correct, because you actually have got every base in your business ticked. Mm. So from your perspective, you wouldn't benefit from having me in your business, because the cost would be big. You'd have to talk to me. You've already got three people, and then there'd be four people. Yeah. That's massive cost, because now you've got, oh, I used to teach networking. I without a calculator, I think there's 16 relationships between four people. I think there is. Someone with a calculator will come back to me and tell me I've miscalculated that. But it isn't a... So when you had two people... You had one relationship, and then you add a third person, you got three relationships. I think with four, you've got 16 relationships. That's really hard to manage. From my perspective, and I'm just thinking about this, you actually don't have anything to bring to my party either, because you're fully consumed with your own investing, highly successful. You're using all the capital you currently have, so you don't have spare time, you don't have spare capital. And I've got more experience than you. So actually, I... This will sound harsh. I don't want you as a JV partner.
But it's that,
yeah. We're all friends here, guys. Yeah. We're open and honest communication is one
of
our values.
We've qualified that one out there.
But it's mutual, isn't it? I can't bring anything to your party. So what is critical... Now, let's change it. And let's just say for a moment that... You were a very experienced franchisee, but you were short of money and you wanted to rapidly... So we're about to enter a very deep recession, in my opinion, and you recognized that, but you didn't have any money. So you've got all the experience, but maybe you've just been for a divorce or whatever. You haven't got loads of money, but you really want to build aggressively over the next 2 years when it's a buyer's market. You might come to me and say, look, Frank, I can't bring money to the table, but you know I'm good at this. I'm good at marketing. I'm good at selling. I'm good at signing up vendors. I'm good at buying houses. How about I put in 40 hours a week and you fund the marketing, Frank, and we'll go halves on everything we buy. Now I'm interested and now you're interested. Does that make sense?
It does.
So I might think, yeah, I'll put 100 grand to one side. We'll smash it. We'll buy 25, 30 houses over the next 2 years. We'll have half of each. That's half of 25, 30 houses I wouldn't have otherwise, and it's half that you wouldn't have otherwise because you don't have the 100 grand to put into marketing, etc. I'm not saying you need 100 grand, but I'm just to buy 25 houses over 2 years, you probably do need about 100 grand actually, just for transactional costs, marketing costs, etc. Now it's not 100% plus 100% is 160%, it's actually 100% and 100%. The synergistic value there is probably a total of 300%, even though we'll need to have a meeting once a week, we'll need to, you know, touch to communicate about the stats and how it's all going. That's what works. And so you need to make sure that what you're bringing to the party with the other person is going to be more than the sum of the parts. That's what's the key factor to consider. And then once you're both agreed on that, and I have people approach me to JV all the time that I have to say no to because we're not agreed on it. They would get masses out of JVing with me. But if it's a one-way relationship, I'd just be teaching them, you know, that isn't a JV. And then the other side of it is absolutely, once you're both agreed that you're going to get significant value from this partnership, then you need to put it down on paper. And it's only when you start thinking, right, so let's use that example, that imaginary JV. What happens in 2 years' time? Do we sell them all? Do we start renting them? Obviously, you'd rent them out in the interim, but do we continue renting them out for how long? What happens if I want to sell them all and you don't? What happens if I want to sell one a year and you want to sell three a year? All of that needs to be thought out. And people go, oh, no, don't worry about it. Let's just buy them. No. Do worry about it. Do sort it out. It's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like trying to find that. You almost need to analyze your situation and find the gap in what you don't have. And that's when you need to identify your JV partner. And obviously, you then need to qualify that you would have a good working relationship with those people from those elements. Getting close to wrapping up, but is there sort of a couple of key messages or sort of red flags that you would highlight out there? Because we've seen a lot of JVs come and go. Some have been, well, many have been successful, some have not been successful. Is there just like, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 points of red flags that you would highlight with someone to say, you know, just watch out for these things, or in your experience, which ones haven't worked in the past?
The biggest is be very, very cautious of entering a JV if you're new to property investing. If you haven't bought at least 10 houses, probably be very wary of a joint venture, because you don't know what's good practice and what's not. And what you need to be investing in, and that situation is in your education. You need to be learning tons. The problem is, if you joint venture with someone, you're going to be learning off someone unless they are very experienced, and part of the JV is you're learning from them. That's a completely different situation. But if you're new to property, don't JV with someone else who's new to property. I think that's that's one like big no-no. Mm. The second thing, and this is an unusual one, but I have a JV document, and it is my standard joint venture. And if anyone asks to joint venture with me, it's what I send out to them. I go, yeah, this is my starting point. I'll share it with you. My JV starting point is I will offer strategic time, which is typically half an hour a week or half an hour a month, depending on the nature of the JV. So like I've got a 28-bed hotel. My JV partner on that, we have half an hour a fortnight. That's a reasonable amount of time for me to give her enough strategic input for her to run the hotel successfully. She invests around 8 to 10 hours a week into that joint venture. That's the JV. She's on the ground. She goes, I haven't been to that hotel in over 18 months. She goes to the hotel on a regular basis. She manages the team there. She checks all the money. She reports back to me. She actually reports back to me on a quarterly basis. She liaises with the council, all the regulations and everything. That's a good JV for me. However, I put no money into that deal. It was actually a no money down deal, so she didn't put any money into it either. So there was no money from my perspective, and we're 50-50 on the cash flow from it. 50-50 on the cash flow, 50-50 on the equity. And so my initial document that I send out to people states that. It says I will only put in a fraction of the time. I think it even says, you know, I'm aiming to put in 1% for every 99% you put in, something like that. I will not bring any money to the table unless it's required. If money is required, then that is treated as a third JV partner who gets a return on its own, and we will go 50-50 on everything. And the reason for that is, I've noticed this a lot, they overvalue their time. So an inexperienced JV partner who is putting time into an equation does not equal 50%. If I'm putting in money and experience, that's not an equal JV. And so I have this document, and I can share it with them with you if you want, Royce. In fact, let's make it available in the show notes and you guys can see. And it just lays out, it's only a couple of pages, might be 3 pages in total, but it just lays out, if you want a JV with Frank, this is how it will work. And that, you know, that might take me a 5-minute conversation where someone will say, Frank, I've got this opportunity, it's a great deal, because normally they're bringing the deal to me, but they want my expertise to maximize the monetization, to make sure it works. They will say, would you consider a JV? I say, yeah, absolutely I will. Let me send you my template JV agreement. Have a read of that. If it doesn't sit comfortably with you, no problem at all. If it does sit comfortably with you, let's have a further conversation. And that way, up front, it's really, really clear. And I think before anyone enters a JV, they should have their own agreement. They should write up their template JV agreement so that before they start getting influenced by their potential JV partner, before they start compromising, they write down in the cold light of day, what am I bringing to the table? A bit like you in that imaginary JV we did just now. You've got time, you've got experience, and you're looking for someone who's got some money. That's what you're really looking for, weren't you? I think those are my top two tips, mate. I can't think of a third. Yeah.
We're going to give away the template JV positioning document. So that's going to be on the show notes, which is going to be available on the website, which is www.ethicalpropertypartners.com/podcast. So you can go there and you can download that document, which I highly recommend. I certainly use that as a basis for our JV agreement.
Did you really? You used it for yours, did you?
We did, yeah. So we used that. I think it's a great document because you don't know where to start if it's something new to you. So it gives us a great foundation to kick off with. So I highly recommend you go on and you download that document and have a look at it. It will get some thoughts processing in your head around, you know, what you need to consider. And from this episode, we really hope it's given you an overview of how JVs can really work for you, or they can really work against you if you're not doing the kind of correct due diligence around it. And there is so much more to it than is being advertised out there. So hopefully that's made you aware of it, made you, you know, a bit more cautious around them, and given you a bit of a better understanding as to how they work and how they don't work. Hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to our next session. Look out for us. Thanks.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.